Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is August 12, 2010, and you're listening to show number 70 of Who's Reading the Organon. We'll be reading aphorism number 46 from Hahnemann's Organon today. And we will start right in with our inspirations to get us started. Kind of as a takeoff from yesterday's talk, I keep thinking about these lights and candles, inspiration and illumination. So the first one is a quote from Morris Freehill. He says, "Who is more foolish, the child afraid of the dark, or man, the man afraid of the light?" And a Chinese proverb, which we've all heard before, "Better to light a candle than to curse the darkness." James Thurber says, "There are two kinds of light, the glow that illuminates and the glare that obscures." I wonder if we can take this in a homeopathic reading. And then we've got one more by Adam Weishaupt, who says, "End of all illumination, which human reason can give, none is comparable to the discovery of what we are, our nature, our obligations, what happiness we are capable of, and what are the means of attaining it." I think I hear Vera on the line.
Hi, Debbie.
Hey, Vera. Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Good. You've got your drink with you to keep you quenched?
Yeah, keep on boozing.
Okay, so we are finishing up on the inspirational quotes, and I wanted to mention something on the network that Dr. Chandrakant has posted a question about similar medicine. If medicine is exactly similar, will it act in all potencies, even in mother tincture? I think this, I hope I have the correct person attributing this question. And Jonathan Shores responds with, "Well, why not? Hahnemann postulated and verified the laws of similar, not the law of potency. And with the experiments with potency only came about following the response of the organism to crude doses and most likely tinctures. And he believes on based on his experience that there's some evidence for the idea that the correct potency, that is the precise amount of force and energy needed for that particular organism to respond, will produce a result with a minimum of aggravation. Some strong aggravations are the result of clumsiness on the part of the prescriber." And maybe this will come in to our discussion somehow, either today or another day. And then the last thing on the network to take a look at is Dr. Piyush Kumar. He says, "Patients make us learn more than our books. We read in the books about disease. We read in books about a remedy. A patient who is a live entity with a constitutional intellectual being, and how we interact with him and catch the symptoms, understand the symptoms, and most importantly, relate to them. It holds the key to correct prescription, confidence, and success. Patients exhibit symptoms and tell us how did symptoms develop, aggravate, ameliorate, and what are the concomitants. The patient before us is the person who exhibits, reflects signs and symptoms, and it's our job to read through these signs and symptoms, both remedy and disease." So get on the network and post your comments regarding these two discussions. We are reading aphorism number 46 today, and Vera is going to start us off.
Okay. I'll just jump right in. This aphorism is very much examples. Examples are more diseases and more diseases, so it's very technical. But it really does show the background. It shows the tip of the iceberg of Hahnemann's work that led him to present us with homeopathy. Many examples might be adduced of diseases which in the course of nature have been homeopathically cured by other diseases presenting similar symptoms. Were it not necessary, as our object is to speak about something determinate and indubitable, to confine our attention solely to those few diseases which are invariably the same, arise from a fixed miasm, and hence merit a distinct name. Amongst these, the smallpox, so dreaded on account of the great number of its serious symptoms, occupies a prominent position, and it has removed and cured a number of maladies similar symptoms. How frequently does smallpox produce violent ophthalmia, sometimes even causing blindness? And see, by its inoculation, Desauter cured a chronic ophthalmia permanently, and Leroy another. An amaurosis, blindness, of 2 years' duration, consequent on suppressed scald head, was perfectly cured by it, according to Klein. How often does smallpox cause deafness and dyspnea? And both these chronic diseases it removed on reaching its acme, as J. F. R. Close observed. Swelling of the testicle, even of a very severe character, is a frequent symptom of smallpox, and on this account it was enabled, as Klein observed, to cure, by virtue of similarity, a large hard swelling of the left testicle consequent on a bruise. And another observer saw similar swelling of the testicle cured by it. Among the troublesome symptoms of smallpox is a dysenteric state of the bowels, and it subdued, as Frau Wendt observed, a case of dysentery as a similar morbific agent. Smallpox coming on after vaccination, as well on account of its greater strength as its great similarity, at once removes entirely the cowpox homeopathically, and does not permit it to come to maturity. But on the other hand, the cowpox, when near maturity, does, on account of its great similarity, homeopathically diminish very much the supervening smallpox and make it much milder, as Murray and many others testify. The inoculated cowpox, whose lymph, besides the protective matter, contains the contagion of a general cutaneous eruption of another nature, consisting of usually small, dry, rarely large, pustular pimples resting on a small red areola, frequently conjoined with round cutaneous, red cutaneous spots, and often accompanied by the most violent itching, which rash appears in not a few children several days before, more frequently, however, after the red areola of the cowpox, and goes off in a few days, leaving behind small, hard, red hard spots on the skin. The inoculated cowpox, I say, after it is taken, cures perfectly and permanently in a homeopathic manner by the similarity of this accessory miasm, analogous cutaneous eruptions of children, often of very long standing and of a very troublesome character, as a number of observers assert. Would you like to take over, Debbie?
Okay. The cowpox, a peculiar symptom of which is to cause tumefaction of the arm, cured after it broke out, a swollen, half-paralyzed arm. The fever accompanying cowpox, which occurs at the time of the production of the red areola, cured homeopathically intermittent fever in two individuals, as the younger Hartage reports, confirming what J. Hunter had already observed, that two fevers, similar diseases, cannot coexist in the same body. The measles bears a strong resemblance in the character of its fever and cough to the whooping cough, and hence it was that Busquillon noticed in an epidemic where both these affections prevailed that many children who then took measles remain free from whooping cough. They would all have been protected from and rendered incapable of being infected by the whooping cough in that and all subsequent epidemics by the measles. If the whooping cough were not a disease that has only a partial similarity to the measles, that is to say, if it had also a cutaneous eruption similar to what the latter possesses. As it is, however, the measles can but preserve a large number of whooping cough, and that only in the epidemic prevailing at the time. If, however, the measles come in contact with a disease resembling it in its chief symptom, the eruption, it can indisputably remove and effect a homeopathic cure of the latter. Thus, a chronic herpetic eruption was entirely and permanently homeopathically cured by the breaking out of the measles, as Quartum observed. An excessively burning miliary rash on the face, neck, and arms that has lasted 6 years and was aggravated by every change of weather on the invasion of measles assumed the form of a swelling on the surface of the skin. After the measles had run its course, the exanthem was cured and returned no more. And there is one footnote which came after the section that we read from Murray. He said the smallpox coming on after vaccination as well on account of its greater strength as its great similarity at once removes entirely the cowpox homeopathically and does not permit it to come to maturity. But on the other hand, the cowpox, when near maturity, does, on account of its great similarity, homeopathically diminish very much the supervening smallpox and make it much milder. And he says many others testify to that fact. And the footnote says, this seems to be the reason for this beneficial, remarkable fact, namely, that since the general distribution of Jenner's cowpox vaccination, human smallpox never again appeared as epidemically or virulently as 40 to 50 years before, when one city visited lost at least one half and often three quarters of its children by death of this miserable pestilence. So help me understand that little footnote there. He's saying that the reason that there was such a beneficial, remarkable improvement since Jenner's cowpox vaccination was that there was a similarity.
Others probably know more about this. Hahnemann did play with the idea of vaccinations. Initially he thought it was a good idea, and then he got turned off by it. But here he's giving examples how, as far as I understand it, when people have had inoculations, and immediately after the inoculation have gone through the disease they've been inoculated against.
And you will hear that very often. People have told me again and again that they went to have the flu shot and they got the flu.
Yeah, the flu shots I've heard very often. And the thing that I find harder to handle is that the people who get the flu shot are much harder to treat. There's something in the symptoms that just sticks.
Yes. And I recently mentioned a story that I heard about a woman, an older woman, who thought that it was really important. Her doctor told her to get the shingles vaccination, and she didn't have any problem with it at all, I mean, with any skin disease. And then she took the vaccination, and a week later, guess what? She had a very bad case of shingles.
Wow.
So we have to be careful. And I noticed throughout this particular aphorism, he keeps repeating and giving the adjective homeopathically. Mm-hmm. It's homeopathically diminished. It's homeopathically treated. It's homeopathically this and that. And he wants to be clear to us, I guess because vaccinations were at the beginning stages here, that this was understood.
I think, though, the point that must be taken here is, again, it's something we've discussed in the past, how homeopathic does not mean treatment with small little white pills or drops. Homeopathic, in terms of our treatment, means homeopathic to the case, meaning symptom similarity, not symptom identity, but symptom similarity. And then you have homeopathic that occurs in nature, where, or that occurs by accident through a conventional drug, where all that means is that there is a symptom similarity between the drug or between the new disease and the old disease. So really, it mm-hmm. seems to me that homeopathically means as seen by symptom similarity, and it could be a it could be via remedy, it could be via contagion, but that's what homeopathy is, homeopathically, the whole way through this aphorism is referring to.
Mm-hmm. And in addition, I keep going back to what Dr. Piyush Kumar said in the discussion that he's relating to us on the network, that it is so important for us not only to look at the books and read the books and understand about the disease and the remedies, but also to catch the symptoms and understand the symptoms and how they relate. And this is what he's showing us in aphorism number 46. By all of these proving symptoms, all of these provings and references to physicians during his time and how disease was exhibiting itself in the symptoms and in the way these symptoms were cured.
Mm-hmm. So should we move on to the next aphorism?
Oh, wow, that was quick. Okay, aphorism number 47.
Aphorism number 47, because it completes the sentence of all these
okay.
examples. Nothing, and also gets back to what Piyush was saying, nothing could teach the physician in a plainer and more convincing manner than the above. The above is patients. The above is people who come with diseases and what happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing could teach the physician in a plainer and more convincing manner than the above what kind of artificial morbific agent, medicine, he ought to choose in order to cure in a sure, rapid, and permanent manner, conformably with the process that takes place in nature.
He brings us back to the action of the remedy, that it is sure, rapid, and permanent. And do we say that at the beginning?
But I would say... That is the secondary point, is the sure, rapid, and permanent. The primary point is don't learn from theory. Learn from what's mm-hmm. going on in the diseases and learn from what's going on in the patients. When you see a picture in the patients of exactly what their disease is, and you know that nature can cure that disease by producing a similar disease, and you know examples of similar diseases, then you're looking for the medicine that can produce those symptoms, the remedy, the medicine. Once you have that remedy and medicine, then you can go back to cure in the way homeopathy is intended to cure, sure, rapid, and permanent, although it seems to drop the gentle, which is a little worrying. What I would recommend, if anyone is willing to take this exercise upon themselves, is to look up every disease that's mentioned here, the smallpox, the cowpox, the measles. Look up each of those diseases and write down the main symptoms. Compare between the symptom lists for each of these diseases so that you can see the similarities. And then have a look through the repertory. Have a look at remedies that have these symptoms. It's an interesting exercise to do, and it's interesting especially since it's not a paper case. It's based on reality.
In addition to what you were just inviting people to do with this exercise, it seems at the end of the aphorism number 46, he is also doing the same kind of thing himself. He was saying, if the herpetic eruption was entirely and permanently cured, if this, then that.
Mm-hmm.
If it covered the most similar aspects of the disease, the symptomatology, the skin eruption, then it would have been even a better cure.
Right.
It would have been, right?
Absolutely.
So he's doing the same thing as you just, he did that little experiment before any of us.
Well, the whole thing rests on his observations and experiment. That's the amazing part of it, that we tend sometimes to get too caught up in what he calls the probable explanation, whereas the real basis of homeopathy is Hahnemann's observations, his observation that the China bark caused malarial symptoms in the people who were working with it. his observation that two similar diseases can't exist in the organism at the same time, the stronger annihilates the weaker. These are all straightforward observations, no theorizing required. Afterwards, mm-hmm. So what does this observation mean? But it's almost like there are two faces to it. One is, what does this mean? And here we can theorize and speculate and have arguments with each other on internet lists, and that's a lot of fun. But the other is, how can we use this? And this is Hahnemann's like central focus. How can we use this? He writes elsewhere that it's not possible that God created suffering without programming into human beings the means to overcome that suffering. I'll see if I can produce the exact quote.
If you find it, that would be nice.
And this is part of Hahnemann's quest and his search, because he believes there must be a way of using this. And he found a way of using this, of harnessing the poisons in nature, of harnessing the ill effects to serve mankind, which is really quite incredible. I think that we don't realize how incredible it is. We become blasé to it.
We really admire and find it, you know, I have to say the word miraculous. I think the guy was a genius, obviously, way ahead of his time. And as we read aphorism number 46, I think about the dire symptoms that are occurring in each one. He talks about blindness. He talks about swelling of the testicle, about dysentery, about these really horrifically intense and acute, about deafness and dyspnea, where you can't breathe, and all of these things which can be life-threatening and fearful in populations of cultures. To say that, let's take a closer look at this and realize that there is something that will, he didn't say gentle, unfortunately, but will annihilate them in a law of nature without having to go through these artificial means of let's just protect the child from these childhood diseases, from even getting the disease through these other means. You know, the people who were doing the research, their intention was good. They just, for some reason, couldn't see it in the way that he had this vision. And he was actually, and the people who were working with him, were seeing the results of potentized remedies using the laws of similar. So do we want to go further with aphorism number 48?
Would you like to read it?
Okay. Neither in the course of nature, as we see from all the above examples, nor by the physician's art, can an existing affection or malady in any one instance be removed by a dissimilar morbific agent, be it ever so strong, but solely by one that is similar in symptoms and is somewhat stronger, according to eternal, irrevocable laws of nature, which have not hitherto been recognized. For some reason, I feel as if I just, in my own words before I read that, felt that, you know, in my own being. I felt what he was saying and came to it. And how about you? You've been reading this for a long time and teaching words to students for a long time.
I think it's just very much summarizing everything that he said. I think that very often in the teaching that we do and the teaching that we receive, we relate more to our words and our teacher's words. When Hahnemann explains it very clearly, I think, I don't think that anything here could be misunderstood. Dissimilar disease suspends.
Mm-hmm.
Similar disease annihilates. Dissimilar disease sits on different parts of the organism. It's almost as if you have, you know, evil imps who are saying, I'll take a leg, I'll take the other leg, I'll take the right arm, I'll take the left arm. Here, let's enjoy ourselves, let's torment this person. And they can, because they're all working on different areas. Whereas if you have your evil imps again, and one is saying, I'll take the head,
mm-hmm.
and the other's saying, no, I want the head. And the first one is saying, no, that's where I work. I work with the head. And your evil imps are arguing between them until they go to war and one of them wins, the stronger one, because they both want the same part.
Mm-hmm.
They're not sharing up the organism as dissimilar diseases will do. I wonder
If Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels could be considered a metaphor for that battle that you're talking about over the body, did you know that the historians say that the story was both a satire on human nature and a parody of the traveler's tales? Well, I remember that Gulliver himself, he was a surgeon, and then he was a captain of several ships. I have this picture in my mind of his first voyage when Gulliver was washed ashore after a shipwreck, and then he awakes to find himself a prisoner of a race of people that are just 1/12 the size of normal human beings, less than 6 inches high, who are inhabitants of the neighboring and rival countries. And that's why we call them little people, Lilliputians, because the name of the neighboring countries was Lilliput. And this just seems like it fits perfectly with what you're talking about, the battle over his body, over his possessions, over his material things, and it seems like a pretty good metaphor.
Okay, so next time I talk with you, it will be Sunday, and we are going to move on to aphorism number 49. Hey, we're really moving quickly today and this week. If you can, I would love to know how far along we are in the totality of how many aphorisms we've completed and how many we have left to do. We've actually been doing the radio show for 3 months. It's hard to believe. And it's been wonderful. I encourage everybody to get on to Blog Talk Radio, download the archives, catch up to where we are, listen and comment on the blogs. And Vera also has her personal blog. Take a look at that and interact with the folks there. All right, it's been great. Thank you so very much, and wishing everybody a wonderful week and weekend.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? With homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brooke on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.